Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, guys. Everyone listening, I think this is going to be a very nice episode. With me in the room right now, I have Priscilla Incisa. I was not allowed to say the full name because my Italian is this bad. But first of all, Priscilla, it's so nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. I guess everyone listening now, just by the title of the episode that you have pressed play on now, you know that we're here to talk about the Sassicaia. And Sassicaia is, I would say, it must be more than a job to you.
Okay. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because this is your family heritage.
Yes.
And today in Sassicaia, you are, I don't know what you necessarily call it in that type of family business. Would you say that you are now the chairman?
No. But we have to make a step back.
Yeah.
So Sassicaia is one of the three wines produced in the estate, which is called Tenuta San Guido.
Exactly.
Tenuta San Guido is a family estate, which is in our family since many generations. And so we are a traditional agricultural estate where we also produce other things apart from wine. So we make traditional agriculture, we produce olive oil, we have horses, we have a nature reserve, and so on and so forth. And the wine is one of the activities of the family. My generation is made of five cousins. I am the youngest of five. And my role is the one of taking care of external relations for the family company. So I travel around the world and I speak about our family, our philosophy, and I speak about the wines and I tell the story so that people can have a glimpse of what is all about Tenuta San Guido.
Fantastic. Mm. So, and this history, it goes back quite a long time, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, the history of the estate goes back many generations as it comes through our grandmother's family. But the wine was started by our grandfather, Mario Incisa, who came from Piemonte and he married into a Tuscan family. And he moved to Bolgheri with his wife in the 1930s. So the estate was of his wife. And he started experimenting with Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc in Bolgheri at Tenuta San Guido in the 1940s, so during the Second World War. And his intention was to create a wine that would appeal, firstly, his own taste. So he was very much in love with the wines from Bordeaux. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to make a wine based on these international grape varieties. And then also wine to be shared with family and friends. So the first 20 years of Sassicaia was really a project to remain private. It was not supposed to be a wine to be put on the on commerce, on the market.
Why is that exactly? Was that the intention from day one, or was it to kind of learn how to make
the wine? I guess he wanted to first try out things. So he made experiments for about 20 years, but also wine was really his passion, and the estate was about other things as well. So it was very much concentrated also on the horses and on the agriculture. So wine was more like something that passionate him, but was not something that he would see like an instrument to make money out of it.
Huh. But 20 years is still a very long time. So in those 20 years, when it was just as a private wine, it was not sold.
Yeah, it was consumed within family and friends, and they realized that this wine by being aged for some time. He used also traditional French barriques for the first experiments. Mm-hmm. The wine was getting actually better, was improving with age. So at the end of a certain period of trials, his family and his friends also urged him to take Sassicaia to another level. And that's where my father came into the picture, because he, in his generation, is the youngest of three, and his older brother and sister were more involved with the horses. That were a very important business at the time, whereas he was looking more after the agriculture together with his father as well. And so he had this ambition, this idea to bring Sassicaia to another level and try to make a different wine, which would be then sold on the market. And that's when they called in the enologist who was working for the Antinori family, who are also our cousins, so very close to us. And this enologist called Giacomo Takis started working as a consultant for Tenuta San Guido to produce Sassicaia with the vintage 1968. And he stayed with us until he retired in 2009.
That's a long time.
That's a long time, yes.
So even the business partners have also been kind of family. So it's very much a family.
Yes, and also you can find this also in the relation we have with our importers around the world. We usually have very long relationships, and some of them are really together with us since the very beginning. So we are working with some importers since 40 years or even longer.
But looking back then to the time when the wine was only for private consumption, mm-hmm. and then you took it public, if you want. Mm-hmm. How big of the family business was wine then? How much was horses?
No. Wine was very small.
It was very small.
Mostly, yes, the normal agriculture part of the estate, and the horses were quite important. The horses were started in the 1930s, and they stayed quite important until the 1980s, I would say. And then the two things crossed each other. So the wine became more important, and the horses are still there, but now the wine has become the main activity.
Yeah, because I see sometimes if I've seen someone see a Sassicaia wine for the first time, mm-hmm. they say that I've had that before.
Yes,
but it's been in olive oil.
Ah, yes.
Because it's kind of the same bottle.
The bottle,
right?
Is the same. It's the olive oil bottle is the same as a 750 ml of a wine bottle.
Yeah,
and it's also a similar label. It has the star of the wine on top. So sometimes people mistake it for a wine bottle.
But probably not. It would be just enough difference to not be able to fake it and bring the wrong bottle.
It doesn't say Sassicaia on the label, for example.
Yeah. So going from 1968 mm-hmm. up until now.
Yes.
So it's been a fairly long time, right?
Yes.
If I read correctly, I was not there. But I heard that in 1968 and even in the early years of the public Sassicaia, it was a pretty big success right away, right?
Yeah, well, I wasn't there either. No. I'm not that old.
But you maybe heard the story.
Yes. Well, it was quite a success at the beginning when we entered a competition organized by Decanter in London in 1978 with the 1972 Sassicaia, which mm-hmm. was tasted blind against 33 other Cabernet Sauvignons from around the world, and it came out the one that was most preferred by the critics.
Yeah.
So this was the first moment of visibility also abroad. And then we were very fortunate to receive the 100 points for the 1985 by Robert Parker. So also this helped a lot to establish the brand also outside our country.
And wine-wise, it's not very easy to get a hold of the really old Sassicaias now. I see that in Oslo, there are certain places that have heavier wines with some age, which is pretty fun to try. Mm-hmm. But since 68 and up until now, What has kind of been the big changes in the wine? Has there been any big changes in the winemaking or in the vineyard or what's
been
going on?
I would say that there haven't been major changes. We are still following nowadays the teachings and the experience of Giacomo Takis, and then what my grandfather was doing with him at the very beginning, and then what my father has set up with him for the following years.
So was it, because now it's 85% Cabernet Sauvignon,
yes,
and it's 15% Cabernet Franc.
Yes.
Has that also been the same forever?
Yeah, it has been pretty much the same percentage. Maybe there was some earlier years where it was 80-20, but it's not very different than the beginning. It's very much the same percentages across all the years.
But is that also part of then the vision moving forward to kind of keep it the same?
Well, we have since 1994 a set of rules because we have a Bolgris Assicaia DOC mm-hmm. appellation.
Well, that started in 94.
In 94, yes. So since 94, anyway, the minimum is 80% Cabernet Sauvignon. So we stayed on that proportion.
But was that something that you was part in deciding, or was that some...
Well, it was decided by the Italian authorities, the government, to make it for the whole Bulgari area, so yeah. Bulgari DOC for red. And then at the same time, they made a subzone of Bulgari Sassicaia. And then in 2013, the subzone became its own appellation, Bulgari Sassicaia DOC.
So, but that has to follow the
rules. Yeah, basically the rules were written around the practices that we were doing and we're still doing.
So your practices kind of
became
the rule, kind of.
Yes, because that's the way we have been making the wine since pretty much the beginning. So.
Yeah. And technology-wise, have you incorporated much of the modern styles of winemaking in the wine?
No, it's not very. It's, yes, of course, keeping up with time, but still using stainless steel tanks like Takis had introduced, whereas our grandfather was using wooden boat,
the very big ones,
yes,
right?
Yes, the very big ones, yeah. For vinification. So it's not a very, if you come to see our winery, it's very practical. It's very much a working space, but it's not like one of these super modern wineries that you may see somewhere else.
So
it's
kind of classic, but with modern
classic
necessities.
Yeah, exactly. Classic with a modern necessity.
Yeah. Okay, so the area that you're in, though, mm-hmm. It's, I understand that in the area you have kind of two different zones of Sassicaia where you make wines. Is that right? There's one that is closer down to the foot of the hill.
Yes.
And other part of the...
Well, in Tenuta San Guido, it's a bit of a peculiar situation because the estate is stretching from the seashore back onto the hills for about 13 kilometers. So we have different...
It's pretty big.
It's pretty big,
yeah.
Yes. It's a 2,500 hectares surface. So it's
very big.
It's very big.
Yeah.
And the vineyards are not all together in the same spot, but they are scattered around, starting from about 80 to 100 meters above sea level. And the highest vineyard is just below 400 meters. So you have different plots in different parts of the estate.
So, but you have the Lo di Fesa?
Yes.
You must excuse my Italian because
we're
used to saying this in Norwegian and it could be wrong.
That's perfect.
Lo di Fesa. Mm-hmm. And then you have the Gilabaretto.
Yes.
And then you have the Sassicaia.
Yes.
And so where in this area from the sea up to the mountains?
So generally the Cabernet Sauvignon, which is used for Guidalberto and Le Difese, is coming from the younger vines of the Sassicaia DOC, regardless of where they are located. But also on the lower part, we have planted some Merlot specifically for the Guidalberto. And instead, the Sangiovese, that is part of the blend of Le Difese, we source it from central Tuscany, from the Chianti area.
Mm-hmm. So it's actually quite, it's not just about location, it's also about the grapes and even the area.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
Selvfølgelig må jeg bare takke Temtec igjen. Takk for at dere gjør denne podcasten her mulig. Vi står på jakt etter et vinskap, og det burde man nesten alltid være. Så sjekk ut Temtec sin Prestige-serie, en av toppseriene til Temtec. Bygg de inn, bygg de inn kjøkkenet, la de stå fritt for seg selv. Store, små, forskjellige zoner, trehjuler, LED-belysning, juster temperatur, lys på egne paneler, luftfuktighet, label view hvis du har lyst til å se flaskene før du åpner kjøleskapet. Sjekk ut prestigeserien til Temptech, og tusen takk igjen ja, hos Power, selv Skunders Power, og takk igjen Temptech for at dere gjør podcasten her mulig. Your family, because I was reading a bit in, mm-hmm. in the book of Sasikaya,
okay.
Which was almost like reading some sort of history book.
Okay.
Because I learned that the earliest descriptions or written documents mm-hmm. of your family was 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And that was also about wine.
Okay, yes.
It was some sort of document saying who bought or sold a vineyard.
Yeah, but this, I guess you read about the Piemontese part of the family.
Could be, right? Located. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we had a great uncle who wrote an encyclopedia of all the kind of different grape varieties. So yes, we had already in Piemonte some experiences with the wine, but really the real adventure with the wine in the family started when our grandfather moved to Bulgari and planted this Cabernet Sauvignon up on the hills, and it was something totally new.
Yeah.
Because in Bulgari there were no wine producers of any kind at the time.
Yeah.
And it was also during the war, so not so easy.
But was he primarily to be inspired by the Bordeaux style? Was it that only drinking Bordeaux, or was there anyone in the area making that style at all?
No, it was, he was particularly liking the style of Bordeaux and yeah. the wine from Bordeaux. So he thought Bulgari is by the sea, and we have a special soil which has a lot of stones and pebbles, so maybe it resembles the Grave, for example. So could be that here the Cabernet Sauvignon will thrive. So he tried, you know, just...
Just tried. And 20 years later.
And 20 years later, he made something again different. And so the production was augmented a little bit slowly. And then he designed the label like we see it nowadays with the star. And then that's it. And 50 years later, we are here talking about
it in Norway. So I was... visiting you because you are here. Have you been, I have to ask first, have you been in Norway before?
I have, yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you were having a tasting earlier today with a few selected people, and I ran by
and I
had to just taste the wines
yes.
and I heard they were open and we were going yeah. to talk today. So we had the Le Difese, Grigioberto,
Sasikaya,
19, 15 and 12.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I think when people think of Sasikaya, they typically think that they're very ageable.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I always love to ask the people who know the wine best
mm-hmm.
is when to drink it.
Okay.
Right? Because to me, drinking them today and having tried some before as well, they seem to be fairly...
Approachable, yes.
Right? Which is typically, you know, some wines, they are not that approachable if they're very ageable.
Yes.
So this, what's going on?
It's a double aspect of this wine. It's relatively approachable young because the tannins are very smooth and well integrated and the wood is not predominant. So very nice to drink young. But of course, if you can wait... The wine gets better with age. So the longer people are able to wait and let it age at least 5, 6, 8 years before opening it, or
yeah.
even 10 years. And in the meantime, we say people can drink either Le Difese or with Alberto, you know.
Yeah, because they are much more approachable. And they're made in that style to be that as well,
yes.
right?
Yes, although after 20 years of with Alberto, we can also now say that with Alberto is also has a very nice aging potential, apart from being a nicely approachable wine young.
Yeah.
So you can get both things. And some people just cannot wait. So they have to buy the wines and just enjoy them immediately. And it's also a possibility.
A lot of people do that.
Yeah.
Waiting is very difficult.
Yeah.
But that is not going to, I mean, thinking also a bit to the future again, that is the style you want to keep, but are you forced to change anything moving forward, you know, because a lot of wineries around the world are having to deal with some sort of climate change, mm-hmm. or there is some new technology that they feel like they have to do. Is there anything in the winemaking that is going to change in the future, do you think?
We're not, not in the immediate future, because we are quite fortunate. Bolger is, as I said, right by the sea.
Yeah.
So we have a very nice moderate climate where the sea influence helps in the summer to keep the temperatures cooler, especially during the night. And in the winter, it doesn't ever have so much cold or freeze or frost, so it's very rare. So it's a very nice climate, which is never very drastic. So it's also easier in more challenging vintages that can be maybe drier or warmer. In Bolgheri, we still manage to come across quite okay.
Yeah. And the youngest wine that we tasted today was the 19,
mm-hmm.
and that is the wine that I wasn't quite sure how they said it here at Palmer at the tasting, if that wine was available or is not going to be available, or maybe a little bit available
in Norway.
In Norway, yeah.
No. I think the wine is going to be released, as far as I understood, in December.
Yeah. But it's not that much quantity, so it's kind of maybe not the easiest to get your hands on.
Yes.
What can we say about the 19 for those listening who might want to buy
the 19? Well, the 19 was one of these vintages that you wish could happen every year the same way, because in every moment of the growing season, everything went very well and they were perfect conditions. Especially during the harvesting time, we had a nice temperature difference between night and day. So this allowed the Cabernet Sauvignon, which likes to be on the plants for a bit longer, allowed it to mature completely and regularly. Mm-hmm. So it's a very promising vintage that I don't know if you thought the same, is quite approachable.
I was surprised that it was also, you know, pretty high in acidity.
Yes,
right?
So this will... the high acidity and the fact that it has a good underlying structure also will allow the wine to age well in time.
Yeah. So it's not overripe at all is what I meant.
Yes.
It felt very, yes.
Balanced.
Very balanced. Yes. And very balanced. But with that intensity comes the demand to age it a little bit. But it was very intense.
Yeah.
So how does the 19 compare to the previous vintages? If someone listening has tasted it last year, or
the 18 was much cooler, much fresher with more rain, so maybe it has less body. It's a very elegant wine though. So both styles are quite representative of what Sassicaia should be.
Yeah, and I thought the 15 of the three.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying you have to age it at least for 5 years, maybe 10 years. But I thought the 15 was out of the three, the one that performed the best today, at least.
Yeah.
But is that because of that vintage, or is that just because aging it now for 7 years is good? How was the 15?
Well, 15 was, again, a bit warmer compared to the previous 14. And also compared to the following 16. So it's a wine that has a little bit more body, of course.
Yeah. Mm. Now, before we end today's chat, after having learned so much about about the Tinto Sanguido, there is also another part in winemaking that you, was it last year that you took charge of, which is, again, my Italian, Primum Familia Vini.
Yes. Yeah.
So that is a kind of, would you call it a collection, cooperation, organization?
Well, Primum Familia Vini, which is also called in short the PFV, it's an association of 12 producers from Europe. So some are from France. Then we have somebody from Portugal, Germany, two from Spain, then there's two Italians.
It's Antinori.
Yes,
Antinori. Paul Roger.
Yeah.
Druha.
Yes. Chateau Mouton, Vega Sicilia.
A good group, I would say.
It's a good group.
Yeah.
That also has become, I must say, a good group of friends. It exists since 1992, and we have joined in 2004. And every year, one of the wineries is the president for the year in rotation. So last year, it was my turn. And this year is going to be Pablo Alvarez from Vega Sicilia.
So what happens in that year? What in the, when you get the responsibility for 1 year?
Well, usually you have to, we organize throughout the year different activities together, like events or things like this. And the president is supposed to be there present represent the whole group. And in my year, we didn't do much because it was basically at the end of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And then in the end of the 12 months, you get to organize in your estate together with your family. So it was myself and my cousins, we host, and my father. We hosted the other 11 families who came for 3 days to Bolgheri at the end of June this year.
And maybe open some wine.
And maybe open some wine as well, yes.
Where do I apply?
Exactly.
No, but so has this been to not only hang out, but also kind of share some...
Yes, of course, we share know-how, we share also problems. And, you know, you have to be a family-owned business to be part of the PFV. So we are upholding the same values, generation change and transition, and a lot of attention to sustainability and things like that. So we don't only present ourselves as a group in front of the public, but we also do things together, workshops, and often the younger generations, they do internships with one or the other. So it's also a lot of exchanging of ideas and things like that.
But is there anything in particular that you have learned from each other? You mentioned sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
Has that always been a focus, or is that something that has...
Well, for us, it has always been a focus because, you know, we have a lot of nature in Tenuta San Guido. It's not vineyards, is only 4% of the total surface of the estate. And then we have a very large nature reserve, and we try to keep a lot of biodiversity by having olive trees within our vineyards. And we have a huge forest, which is totally unspoiled. So for us, biodiversity, sustainability, and attention to the territory has been always one of our main priorities.
So that maybe is something that you have taught the others.
No, well, they're all very careful about these things. Yes.
Well, Priscilla, it's been a pleasure having you here.
Thank
I know
you
you're
much.
Busy, so I won't steal too much of your time. But it's very nice to see you. Great to taste your wines, and they're coming out in December.
Yeah, the Sassicaia, yes. Yeah. The others two, I think they're already on the market.
Yeah. So for anyone listening, if you haven't tried them, they're definitely worth trying. And they are approachable. You don't have to wait. Is that what you're saying? You don't have to. it's allowed to try it, even though it's young.
Exactly.
Well, again, thank you very much for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And for everyone else, as always, we will see you next week with another episode. Maybe not with such great company as today, but we will be here anyway. Thank you, everyone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ukens vindtips med Svein en Finansavisen podcast. Programleder Svein Lindin, produsent Lars Brenden Skram, og podcast- og videoansvarlig Marius Mørk Larsen. Ansvarlig redaktør Trygve Hegdar.